Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stone. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. I'm inspired. On my drive-in this morning, I learned that the new Fiat, first to be unveiled in Europe, is going to have, get this, an espresso machine in it.
In the car.
In the car. Now,
that's handy.
On this side of the pond, they're a little concerned about the distractions and all that stuff, but, you know, they don't care over there.
Espresso is important.
That's right. So this is my new goal. This is what I'm shooting for. I want to get a car with an espresso machine in it. What do you think?
Now, are you going to actually drive us then if you get this car? Because
no.
You tend not to drive anywhere.
That's why it's not a distraction. Because I always ride gun.
Okay, perfect. So I'll drive your car that you buy.
So what's the movie? Do you have either a movie or a restaurant report from the weekend? Because you guys are always watching a movie or going to a
new
restaurant.
This week. I wanted to see Moonrise Kingdom, but we never made it there. But we did go to the Buckhead Italian Market, which is my new favorite Italian restaurant. Say hey to Marcello next time you're there.
We got to get him on the restaurant show.
And Mama.
His
mother works there.
And you go enough now that Mama comes out, hugs
you. Hug. Yes.
You get the little grappa at the end of the meal, the whole bit, right?
The whole show.
Well, this is going to be a fun segment. We've got a studio full. A little bit later in the program, speaking of espresso, you know I'm a coffee aficionado, or at least enthusiast. We're going to visit with Dan Redman with Java Tap. We're going to hear from Nancy C. with the Atlanta Board of Realtors. And, of course, she's a practicing real estate broker, I think. We'll see if I'm using the right terms. We'll get a chance to visit with them. And then you remember we took that innovation assessment?
Yes.
So we're going to get a chance to visit with Sally Jamara.
The creator of that.
The creator of that. She is the author.
Yes.
And so this is going to be a real full segment. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce to you the lady that heads up, the president CEO of Cobblestone Consulting, from this point forward to be known as Lori B., but I'm going to give it a shot. Please welcome to the show Lori Bakopoulos.
Perfect. Thank you, Stone.
Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So give us a little bit of a feel, if you would, about the kind of consulting work you do. What are you out there trying to do for folks?
Well, we are a business and technology consulting solutions provider celebrating over 11 years of experience. And we help build solutions for organizations on agile platforms, so it's really easy to customize the solutions to meet our customers' needs. And we provide four lines of business: Microsoft SharePoint development, business intelligence, training, and project portfolio management.
We'd like some business intelligence, I think. How much is that by the dozen? We're a little short on that, don't you think, Lee? What does that mean, though? Seriously, business intelligence.
Well, business intelligence allows you to see data around your organization. So if you have sales information, let's say coming from a Salesforce platform, and you also have sales like account information coming from Salesforce.com, and then you have sales information coming from another database within your organization. A lot of organizations have diverse data sources. So I know this is getting a little techie, but what we do is help bring all those data sources together in one dashboard, so you as an executive in your organization understand how is your sales going from a national perspective.
Now, we recently did an event at the Aquarium for the Women in Technology, and they said there's not a lot of women in technology, but it seems like you found your way through there. Can you share a little bit about what your journey was like?
Yes, and I realize that, and Women in Technology, that's a great organization. I get involved with that often as well. And from my perspective, I've always just enjoyed delivering great business solutions to my customers, and I haven't had a problem.
So has it been an advantage, you think, for you, being a woman in this field?
That's an interesting question. I believe it is. I believe it is an advantage because it's a bit of a different perspective, women coming in and understanding, you know, real business solutions and problems and implementing the best solutions.
So do you have a sweet spot? Is there a certain industry or department that you work with that's really in your wheelhouse?
Well, yes, we actually have three different areas that we specifically work in. We work with Fortune 500 companies, so we help implement enterprise-wide solutions for them, similar to what I just spoke about in regards to business intelligence and project portfolio management. We also work with medium-sized companies as well as universities to help them implement frameworks around project management. And then finally, we've taken our expertise around these large-scale solutions and really simplified them and are helping small businesses now be able to basically act like large businesses.
Now, can you talk a little bit about how you work with the universities?
Yeah, we are in the process of doing a needs assessment with large universities here around town to understand what their pain points are so that we can provide an out-of-the-box solution for universities. We found that a lot of the issues that corporate America is having are very similar to what universities are having. As we all know, universities are strapped with, you know, funding as well as resources similar to corporate. So we are finding that their top three issues are really understanding what projects do they have to get out the door and also understand how to manage those projects. And then finally, get something in there that's really simple to use. So that's what we're trying to do, is really simplify some of these large-scale things that we deliver to bigger customers and be able to provide it to universities as well.
This strikes me as a very competitive space. Is that accurate? I mean, how do you even go to market and get on the radar of the people that can make the decision to engage you? That's got to be a real challenge.
Well, that is, and we do have a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to relationships and building relationships as well as getting out there in the public eye. So I do a lot of work with Women in Technology as well as the Georgia Women Business Council, and also work with the Small Business Development Center. So we are out in the public and talking about all these great things that we're doing.
Now, when you're in the community like that, do you take a leadership role usually when you're involved in those organizations?
Yes. I'm involved with an organization called the Association for Strategic Planners. And this organization, I lead as the president. We have an Atlanta chapter here. And this organization is a national organization, been in place for quite some time. And the purpose and objective of the organization is to help nonprofit, for-profit, and individuals develop, design, and implement strategic plans. So that's a really great place to meet innovators, and I'm kind of excited to hear about innovation here a little later in the show. Yeah. But we really work with folks to drive strategic plans and make things happen.
Now, what kind of mistakes, because I got to believe you probably see patterns emerge over time, almost to the point where you roll your eyes and you know, to yourself, right? Not for the client, like, oh, here we go again. Right. You know, they made mistake 3B. What kind of mistakes, gaps do you see when you're doing that type of work or with your traditional client work that you just see over and over again in companies where they're not taking advantage of working with someone of your expertise and getting the benefit of counsel from somebody like you?
What we're finding is it's not really mistakes that people are making. It's just everybody is so busy. As we all know, we have so much going on and so little time that organizations just need advisors like ourselves to come in and really take an assessment and take a look at the business and understand how we can leverage resources that they already have and really get the most out of it. So in regards to what mistakes, we're just finding that folks don't have a centralized location to drive all this information so they can make fact-based decisions.
So a lot of lost opportunity cost, right, I would think?
Yes, lost opportunity cost, as well as not leveraging human capital within the organization. So folks may not be working on the right things at the right time. So it's really...
That would never happen around
of
here.
Course not.
Nor would we have six or seven different places where our data comes. Right. I can't envision
crazy.
That ever happening. I'm not buying it.
So can you walk us through what an engagement looks like with your firm?
Yes, absolutely. We come in and...
What's the pain I'm having that I'm calling you?
So the main pain is that they're from... Let's take the project portfolio management solution. So the main pain is that I'm not able to provide reports accurately to my leadership team.
Okay, so the leadership team's getting frustrated. They're not getting the reports they need.
Correct. And that's because you don't have all your projects in one central data source so that you can articulate what's going on in your company. So you don't know exactly how many projects are going on and exactly what people are working on. And then where is the status of these? So how are you going to understand, you know, where your goals are if you can't articulate that?
Right. And the best use of your employees' times.
Exactly. And the other thing is that we typically start an engagement in the IT organization. So IT is a very maxed out resource for many organizations.
Oh, yeah.
So they have requests coming in the door like a fire hose. So a lot of times IT is seen as incapable to get things done because there's so many things going on.
When everybody
in the
wants
door.
Their IT thing, I want my computer fixed now.
It's urgent.
It's urgent.
Exactly. Everything's urgent. But the bottom line is at the beginning of the year, whether you're a university or a corporation, you start with a budget. And that budget is typically aligned with your strategy as well as what projects do you need to get done. So the pain point is delivering the information to the executives of what does our project portfolio look like based on what we decided on for the budget. And then the tools and processes that we are able to put in place for the IT managers, the PMO directors are typically our main customer, then they then can weekly articulate what has been approved, what they're working on, and when things come in the door, they can say, instead of, no, I can't help you because I'm overwhelmed, they can say, yes, I'd be happy to help you with that project. You're just going to have to pick out of this list of projects, which priority project do we need to move off the plate so we can put something else in and help you with your decisions.
That sounds like a good solution. Can you pull that off, Stone?
Absolutely. So let's go down that path for a second, though, because I don't buy these kinds of services every day. How would you go about shopping for someone? I guess what I'm really saying is, let's say I'm, because it is a competitive space, and I'm talking to two or three people in your space.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of questions should I be asking? What should I be looking for in a provider so that I can make an intelligent, informed decision about who to work with?
So couple of the questions that I'd be looking at is, does this organization have project portfolio management as a core competency of their organization? Do they have consultants in their organization that have the certifications and expertise to bring the solution to the table? And then finally, how does the company stack up from, you know, how is their reputation in the marketplace?
Well, like, and have they been on High Velocity Radio?
Of course.
That's an automatic knockout factor if they haven't been on a radio show, right?
That's perfect. Exactly. I completely agree.
So what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you if they'd like to have a conversation and learn more about your services?
Well, I'd invite them to contact me directly, actually, at laurieb@cobblestoneconsulting.com. And
that's a website, cobblestoneconsulting.com?
That's right, www.cobblestoneconsulting.com. And I invite you to come look at our website and check out some of the things that we're doing.
But before you go, I have a question about the endurance horse racing.
What? I did not get this memo. What are you talking about?
That's a hobby of hers, right?
Really?
Yes. Endurance horse racing. It is it's a marathon ride on a horse. So it's distance riding on a horse. And it was positioned after the Calvary. So it was established in 1955 in the U.S., and it's basically distance riding on a horse from 50 miles to 100 miles in an allotted time. So
where does this take place?
It happens in state parks as well as...
You ride in a circle?
We actually do. We ride
big circle,
in big loops of 10 and 15 and 20 mile loops.
Wow.
So it's great fun. You have a certain amount of time to get these races done. So 50 miles.
How long does that take?
Well, it depends. A really fast 50 you can do in 4 hours.
Wow.
But you have 12 hours to complete a 50. And if you go into the 100 space, then you have 24 hours to finish 100.
Wow. Have you done 100?
I have not done 100 yet.
Have you done 50?
I have.
Wow.
How cool is that? We have our own real-life Hidalgo? Is that the movie, right?
That's right. That's right. It's exactly like Hidalgo. So my horse, Dublin, and I compete in the 50-mile race.
That is way cool, because I was going to suggest as we wrap the interview up that it would be a lot of fun, I think, and very informative to have you come back sometime, maybe with a delighted client, and kind of get their perspective on your work. But I'm trashing that. Forget that. I want to do the horse, the endurance horse race show.
Well, that would be a ton of fun. The stories would be absolutely hilarious.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in this morning. I really do hope you'll come back. Maybe bring a client. I think that could be a fun, maybe a panel discussion. Would you be up for that?
I would love that. Thank you. Yes, yeah. That would be lots of fun.
So how about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
I would love to do that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Next up on High Velocity Radio Show, we have the partner and executive practice leader for Traversa, Miss Sally. I'll probably screw up the last name, and I'm going to give it a shot. Jamara.
Perfect.
Perfect again. Welcome to the show, Sally.
Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here.
You screwed up Sally.
I screwed up Sally.
That's a tough one.
Well, when I was saying it, I was thinking 1L, but now I'm corrected when I see the business card. So I am going to ask the question because I want you to have an opportunity to share kind of an overview of what you do. But the truth is, Lee and I have had a little bit of a peek into this. You let us take an innovation assessment. And you were still willing to come on the show, so that says something, huh?
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about the company and your work with innovation.
Okay. I'm an organizational consultant, so I work with companies to help the business be successful. So whatever their business strategy is, do they have the right people, do they have the right culture and the right approach to deliver on the strategy? So that's what I do, and I have been listening to my clients a lot lately, and everybody's talking about innovation. And we want a pillar of our culture to be innovation, and we want people to be innovative and all that good stuff. And I said, great, how are you going to do that? Like, what does that mean to you? And they were like, well, you know, we're not really sure. So, you know, being the good consultant, I said, well, there's got to be some stuff out there. So I'll do some research and figure out
what. There's got to be an assessment and a four-quadrant model, right?
Absolutely. There's got to be something out there that they can use to help, you know, put it together. And I did a lot of research and found absolutely nothing that made sense. So I said, well, wow, what an opportunity. And a couple of my clients said, you know, can you help us with this? So I said, all right, you know, I'll do that. And so I started the process of really coming up with, you know, what is the factors that help people be innovative. But the key for me is it's not as much the individuals. That's a key piece of it. But then what is the culture that they're working in, and how supportive is the culture in promoting innovative capabilities? So what's the influence factors that go back and forth there? And can I help them have intelligent, fact-based conversations about what type of innovation they need to be successful in their business, and then do they have the right capabilities, and what can they do to help support their employees?
Do you find that sometimes companies, they, on one hand, they say, oh, we want you to try stuff and be innovative, but they also say, but don't fail.
Oh, right. And don't change anything. Be innovative, right. But don't change anything.
Yeah. Make sure it's approved.
We only want winners.
Yeah. We only want winners, and there's no mistakes allowed. And, you know, but we want you to be innovative.
Yeah. But yeah. No, take shots as long as they work. Yes. Go right ahead.
Actually, I see that a fair amount. So that was one of the drivers for me to say, I really think we need to look at this differently and what you really want. And the culture aspect of the innovation assessment, there's the individual employee portion, but then there's the culture aspect. And it really goes after what are the factors of what gets rewarded in an organization. Because senior leadership, you know, believe that they're trying to support innovation and that by talking about it, but they don't always know what's rewarded, and they don't always recognize some of the things that happen in the organization where people feel discouraged by bringing issues up and things like that. Because challenge is one of the big factors that relates to innovation, people being willing to challenge the status quo and what's been done before and why we did it before. That's what brings innovation about. And, you know, it has to be accepted in order to have it happen.
So do you sense that sometimes the leadership gets a little defensive about the status quo?
They can, yes. We try to smooth that in, but yeah, you but know, help you, them understand it.
How do you create a culture that embraces innovation and this challenging
I've
of told, the status
I've
quo?
I've answered this question before. Espresso. That's a good I even brought a guy in.
Well, you really need to look at kind of what's the strategy, and because I believe there's different types of innovation, and all of them are good. So some organizations are really, their strategy is all about efficiency and making things more accurate and less expensive. If that's true, then you want to align your organization to support
right.
that. Other organizations really need to be proactive market leaders in order to compete. If that's true, then you need a different culture and a different setup to support the different types of innovation.
Does that sometimes mean different people? Or do you think that any person can be kind of coached up to be good in either any of those kind of categories?
No, I do believe that different styles are natural for people. And although, you know, obviously your willingness to take risks, again, challenge or make mistakes and things like that is important. But if you're rewarded for doing it and the company encourages you to do it, then chances are you're willing to take more risks
mm-hmm.
and willing to step up a little bit. But you don't go from somebody who, you know, only wants to think in the here and now and do what I'm told to, you know, coming up, you know, usually with the next big idea that changes the whole market. I mean, there tends to be some different styles and traits that people exhibit.
You underscored a very interesting thing early in the conversation that I'd never really thought about. You could have the most innovative person in the world, and if they don't have any influence in the organization, whether you've helped create it by virtue of the culture or by their own initiative, that's not doing you any good, right?
Well, actually, you've got a very frustrated employee.
Yeah,
is what you've got.
I'll bet you. And I have a follow-up question about frustration, because I'm trying to envision a group of people getting together to be innovative around a set of challenges and to brainstorm. And in my experience, you got a lot of smart people. They all have a vested interest in coming up with a solution. And you come up with a lot of great ideas, but you can only implement one, right? So how do you keep the people from remaining frustrating and being willing to contribute next time if they contributed a great idea, but we just didn't do that one? It was great. We're glad you were here. You really helped. But Joe's idea didn't get implemented. How do you keep him from not being frustrated and being willing to contribute next time we get together to do this?
It's all about the process and people feeling included and heard. So if you're going through a brainstorming process, you know, and I'm one that always says only go after the one or two things. Don't try and do 10
right.
Because, you know, we're not really successful when we try and do 10 things at the same time. So, you know, they'll have to, you know, hone down and pick the ones that they really want to go after. But if they make the people feel good about having come up with the ideas and recognizing them for that effort, then people tend to want to participate and help. And they recognize that there might be a better idea, one that is better timed to the market and situations like that. And they'll get on board and help to support the implementation of that. I mean, it's not like it has to be my idea usually. Those are the folks that become entrepreneurs and go off and do their own thing anyways, if it has to be their idea. But within an organization, I think that people, as long as they feel recognized for the effort and not punished for coming up with some odd idea or bizarre issue that they want to, you know, say, hey, this could be better, then I think it really does help to foster that environment that says we're in this together, we're working on this. And as long as good things are happening from the company's perspective and that they're able to implement and they're successful, then it feels good.
So they have some degree of authorship, if you set that up right. They feel like they really did contribute.
Yeah, even if their idea particularly.
Even if it was a specific idea.
Right.
So I want to hear more about this assessment. Tell us a little bit more detail. It's very involved, as I remember.
It is. It's quite extensive. This is not you take 10 questions and you become personality. This is really, it takes about an hour to take. There's three components to it. It's all online, of course, and is the individual component, which is about you kind of your philosophy and approach to innovation and the number of traits associated with that. There's also a set of puzzles, and this is the only assessment that actually, you know, we say I'm really creative or I'm really good at coming up with ideas and I'm good at trending forward. Well, we actually test that and see
probably the part I flunked.
See how you did. And basically, again, it's all about awareness. It's not to say, you know, that you can't learn these things or do that, but it is about awareness to see where your strengths are as it relates to innovation. So we do the puzzles and that gets incorporated. And then we do the corporate culture piece, which is looking at kind of the varying views of how things really get done within an organization, and again, what gets rewarded, what gets supported, and what's the methodology around that. So it's pretty awesome.
Now, where are you at in the assessment? Is it being rolled out now, or are you still kind of beta testing it?
We are still beta testing. We're about, 35 people away. So we're very close being validated.
So we got a few more in this room.
Yep, we got a few more signing up. I'm excited about that.
Nancy can't wait. I can just see she's on the edge of her seat.
Yeah, everybody wants to take it. Am I innovative? Everybody's innovative, remember. It's just the type of innovation style that you have. But we are moving very, very quickly. And this is one of the things that really makes me believe this is necessary. Usually when I work with large corporations, you go through a whole process of you're talking about what their needs are, and then you help them to understand what you can do and your expertise in that. And then, you go through a process and it takes months and months to make something happen. Well, when I kind of started talking to companies about this, saying make sure that there was a need there, they were like, great, can we take it? How about Monday? And nice. So I was like, wow, okay. So we've been kind of scrambling to kind of make this happen. But people keep saying, wow, this is huge and there's nothing else out there like it. And this is exciting. So I'm excited about the opportunity that's here. But it's really about helping individuals and companies be successful. So it really fits into what I'm trying to do. But it's also really important coming out of the economic situation to be thinking about things differently and getting ahead. So this is a perfect time for companies to really be thinking about, what do I want to have from an innovation strategy, and how do I align that with my business strategy, and how do I support the employees to make sure it happens?
So talk to us a little bit about what you do with the data on the backside, because I can see just handing of the report to the wrong guy with the wrong context and maybe not doing a very good job with the data. So that's where the rubber really meets the road, right, is how to use the data to make good decisions?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, there's two components to that. Again, the individual component only goes to the individual. So they get their own data, and they get to understand the awareness, and they get to share that.
So that's helpful. That's plenty of value right then and there for the individual.
Absolutely. I've had people go, just in taking it, go, oh, wow, this is fabulous. It got me thinking about different things. So what's been fun for me is they'll say, it got me thinking, and it made me laugh. So that, to me,
said, that a win? That's a win?
Did you laugh when you took it?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't laugh. Okay.
I'll give you some.
Give her some context of your background. You're not just some, person off the street here.
That's right. I am very innovative. I reinvent myself all the time. I've been hired and fired from every high-end change management consulting firm on the planet, so I have to reinvent myself. But what I wanted to say is, I thought that it nailed me. Which I'm not sure that's all that valid, but my wife said it nailed me. And to me, that's very telling.
Oh, that's really, now I know it's true. Right?
Now you know it works.
I'm good. I can check that off in my validation study. But the second part after the individual is the corporate culture. And that's where it gets, you really need to be, your strategic consulting hat needs to go on. I do that in terms of understanding kind of what's real. So it goes out to a number of employees in the organization. So it's not just somebody saying, this is what I think my culture is about. Now you're getting real data back saying, this is how things are done. And then I also do some interviews with the senior leadership team to talk about where they need to be from a future perspective, where they see the pain and things that happen. And then what I do is, if you remember when taking the assessment, there's a lot of really specific questions about the culture. And so this helps us to go back and say, here are the real factors that can leverage your organization if you do that differently. And here's a methodology. And really, so it gives them a roadmap to decide what do they want to focus on and help them to deliver something different in their organization. So it's specific enough so that they can do something with it. It's not just, here's where you are. This is like, here's what you can do and here's what would leverage in your organization.
So it's more actionable?
Very actionable, yeah.
Well, and I suspect you see all kinds of patterns emerge, and whether the executive team immediately agrees with the perception of the employee base, it doesn't really matter if the employee base thinks that we're a 2 on a scale of 10 on this particular item. That's where you are, right? At least.
Yeah, there's something telling you there. I mean, that's good data to have.
Right.
We actually combine the individual capabilities with the corporate culture piece. So we can see the trend line. If the employees are, more innovative than the culture is allowing, or the culture it wants to be more innovative than the capability of the employees. And it's not so much in terms of that you need to change out anybody or anything like that, but it's more on how do you structure so change to happen within your organization to support where you need to be.
And before I got fired from the last change management job where we did a little assessment work, it was impressed upon me. You got to go beyond just looking at mean scores. You got to look at the distribution of those scores, because if you've got a mean score of 4, you might still might have a whole bunch of 1s and maybe a few 10s. And so you got to take a closer look at the data than just averages, right?
You know what they say about averages. You know, my hair's on fire and I'm sitting on ice, so on average, I'm okay. that doesn't work.
But that's
very
where
well.
It helps to have someone like you with your expertise to come in and help interpret it and explore some ideas for doing something about it if they so choose to.
Yeah, and we report out how much agreement there is in each of the questions things like that, so that they get a sense of the spread in terms of people doing that. And we can also cut it by department and organization as long as you have enough people in it, so that we protect the employees in the process so they can be honest. But so we can cut it a number of different ways to provide them kind of where's what happening and what you need to do about it.
Now, do you think clients are going to want to compare their results to some big normative database and or to even an industry database? And does it really matter? And is there any value in that?
Well, we are building the normative database, so we are moving forward on that very rapidly.
But the oil company always wants to know, how's the other oil company scored? Does that really even matter?
I guess whatever you want to compare yourself
probably
to is fine. It'd be tough, though, to have, unless I run through and have everybody take the assessment, because they have to take this assessment in order for there to be a normative database.
Right.
I'm happy if they want to introduce me to the rest of the industry and allow them to take it.
That would
be great. I'll be happy to do all that for them. But effectively, what we are doing is saying, where do you compare against the people who've taken it? And what does that mean for you? So to me, again, it's all about awareness, and it's all about understanding where you are now and where you want to be. And as long as that's happening, that conversation really gets the ball going in terms of where you want to be. So from that perspective, it's a healthy conversation and a good one to have. So even if you think, well, I really want certain people or I only want to be compared, over time we'll be able to do that. But right now as we're building, it's more just although we have been very selective about who we pick in the normative database.
But I'll tell you, just doing an assessment, if you do it right and you don't allow the organization to get too assessment weary, and if you share some sort of results with them, just conducting an assessment, I'm sure this has been your experience, can be a very solid employee engagement strategy, because it demonstrates leadership's commitment to gaining this information and supporting them. This can be incredibly powerful.
It is very impactful. And the key, though, is you've got to give them the information back.
Yeah,
the good and the bad. You've got to be honest.
Right?
You can't just say, oh, thank you for taking that. We are now, heading off in a different direction. We have to really kind of explain to them what happened and give them the results. Talk them through the good and the bad, and what does that mean, and what it can mean for them. So that gets everybody kind of on board and willing to move forward, because, again, people are so relieved that it's fact-based and it's based on something that's that they believe in and that makes sense. I mean, there's a logic to this, too, that's incredible. So, people, when they take it, they often go, wow, this is me. This makes sense for my organization. I didn't realize we were driving so hard in these areas. Maybe we need to pull back or that type of thing. It really is something that they can move forward with their organization on. So that's the fun part.
Now, in this beta test, you said you're looking for about 35 more. Is there types of people you're looking for in certain industries or businesses to fill out the rest of the beta test?
We are looking for people in business. So it's usually in more of a, not the super micro entrepreneur as much as people who are working in
like
a corporate
environment.
Corporate environment. It doesn't have to be huge, although I have a lot of really large companies that have signed up to do this. That's that's why we've made so much progress so quickly.
Right.
So we were only started beta in April. And we probably will be done by the end of this month. So that's a very fast process to do that. But that's because the large companies are like, sign me up.
Right.
Wow, you're doing great work. Keep it up. This is fantastic.
It's very fun. I'm really excited. And, it plays to my own innovative, capabilities and desires as well. And that kind of thought leadership that you can provide to organizations.
And then this could be a whole new career of just creating assessments.
Well, there's version. There's click in, which is the individual version. There's click on, which is the culture version. And then there's click us, which is the team version.
But, and it's not fair for a male to try to make this comparison, but building and executing a really strong, solid assessment, I'm sure, is like birthing a baby. This is not something you want to do every other month.
It's a big deal. I'll just put it, it's a big deal. It was a big investment, but I'm confident it'll be worth it.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out, learn more about the assessment, maybe have a substantive conversation with you about your work and possibly engaging you to help them?
They should just contact me, S. Jamara, S-J-A-M-A-R-A, at Traversa Consulting. And Traversa is T-R-A-V-E-R-S-A Consulting, all one word, .com.
All right. Terrific. Nicely done. Thanks so much for coming in and joining us this
Thanks
morning.
So much. It's been fun to be here.
Well, hang with us a little bit longer. We got a couple more guests, okay?
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, Lee, it's the real estate segment. It
All
is
right.
This is going to be a lot of fun. You know, we've got the new real estate show off the ground on Wednesday afternoons, and that's been a blast visiting with all these teams. We have with us, I think, maybe incoming president for Atlanta Board of Realtors.
Yes.
And founding partner, senior VP, managing broker for Atlanta Fine Homes, Sotheby's International Realty. Please welcome, if you will, Miss Nancy C. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Stoney Lee. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I am so glad that we got you in the studio. We have had a blast with the new real estate show. We've had it up, what, maybe 5 or 6 weeks now?
Right.
And we've had so much fun with it. And we're so thankful to have Atlanta Board of Realtors as a sponsoring partner for us in that show. And we might even have a shot. We're still trying to work out some of the details. We may have a shot at doing a remote broadcast at an upcoming event, and we want to hear more about that in a moment. But to get us started, give us a little bit of a feel for Atlanta Fine Homes, and tell us a little bit about that team.
Yes. I'm the managing broker for the Buckhead office and the in-town office of Atlanta Fine Homes, and we also have an office in, we call it our North Atlanta office, located in the Alpharetta area. We opened our doors in 2007. Having no idea what we were going to be facing with the economy and the market, but we have done extremely well. And here we are 5 years later with three very strong offices and about 180 agents. And we're privately owned by the Pruitt family. Jenny Pruitt started this company in 07, having had a very successful company before that. And the nice thing about our company is that we're locally owned and operated, and decisions are made right here locally by an icon in the industry. But we have the power of the Sotheby's International Realty brand with offices in 44 countries around the world, a brand that represents quality and distinction that's been in the business since 1744 with the Sotheby's auction house.
1744, wow.
Yes. And we like to say that we have million-dollar marketing in all price ranges because we're not, you know, we might be perceived as a high-end company, but we have all price ranges. And I will tell you on a personal note something interesting. I started out with Sotheby's the Auction House in New York and was in the ground floor.
I hear that New York accent.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a combination.
Southern New York, right?
Louisiana and New York. But I was working for the Auction House when the International Realty Company was founded, and I worked for the chairman of the company then, and I have come full circle, and I'm now.
Did you get to play with that hammer gavel that they knocked down? I've always wanted to grab the Sotheby's hammer.
Did they let anybody do that?
No, not really, but it was a very exciting place to work, I can tell you.
What's it like to be in an auction when that thing's going hot and heavy?
Well, your heart beats pretty fast. Of course, I was not bidding, but it was very exciting to see the beautiful properties, and was a fun place.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And if you blink, you just signed on for $100,000 for some painting you've never heard of. Right? You had to sit on your hands.
Did you? What's something interesting you saw being auctioned off?
Oh my goodness! Well, I can't. I really, you know, right this minute, I can't think of one particular thing. But it was just fabulous paintings and furniture and Chinese works of art and just, you know, it was
just to see it all.
Oh yes, absolutely. Because I could walk on the floor, on the exhibition floors, and view all the property.
It's
prior
like
to
going
the sale.
To the museum.
Yeah, absolutely. Every single day.
Wow.
What a fascinating background.
Yeah.
So, tell me a little bit about recruiting, because I got to believe we've been talking about competition. It seems to be a little bit of a theme that I keep bringing up, but I got to believe that you know it might be a little tough getting the best of the best for your realtors. So you guys must be really good at getting top caliber talent. Does that speak to the culture? I don't want you to reveal any recruiting secrets, but I'd love to know how you're doing it.
I think it speaks very much to the culture, and I was interested in hearing what Sally said about being innovative, and I think that so much of the success of a company, it goes without saying, depends upon the leadership. And we feel that we have very strong leadership, and we have attracted top agents to our company in a short period of time because they realize that what our company has to offer them is the value of the brand, extremely good marketing pieces, and good leadership. And that combined with having, we think, the best agents in the city attracts other agents. I will tell you that our best recruiting is done by our own agents. I don't have to make a lot of recruiting calls because people tend to call us because they know of us through the agents that they happen to co-op with and do business with in the community. They respect our agents. They know they're well-trained, they're highly ethical and honest, and hopefully they respect me as a managing broker.
Now, can you educate our listeners maybe a little bit about what the difference between a realtor, like what's that certification?
Absolutely.
Mean?
Every licensee is not a realtor, and this is a very important distinction that needs to be made. And a realtor is realtor with a capital R. And a licensee who becomes a realtor joins their local board of realtors, and in this case, the Atlanta Board of Realtors. And by virtue of that membership and affiliation, they're also a member of the Georgia Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors. And a realtor ascribes to a higher level of education, training, and most importantly, they agree to abide by the code of ethics of the National Association of Realtors. And so when a client, buyer or seller, hires an agent, not hires, when they ask someone to list their property, they really should ask the question, are you a realtor? Because it is a very important distinction. And we require a certain number of continuing education classes before we can renew our license every 4 years. And we even have a professional standards committee set up so that if you, as the member of the public, or if you are another agent who has a problem with the way a situation has been handled with one of our agents, you have the opportunity to go before a panel of the agent's peers at the Board of Realtors, and a hearing is conducted.
Wow.
In a very fair manner, a panel of five. Here's the respondent and the person who's making the complaint, the complainant and the respondent. A decision is made. And if the panel believes it's worth penalizing the agent in some way, it could be a financial penalty or it could be continuing education if they're found to be in violation of a certain article of the Code of Ethics. In my opinion, this Code of Ethics is one of the most important things.
Well, it really raises the bar, doesn't it? So what
compelled
you to get so involved? Because you're incoming president with the Atlanta Board of Realtors. What compelled you to make that decision? Because that's going to be a real time investment, energy investment?
It is. It's a volunteer job that I am extremely excited about because I have been in real estate. I've been a member of the Atlanta Board since 1984 when I became a salesperson. When I was 12. And I have been involved with the board. I've been on the board of directors now for about 12 years. I am extremely excited about it. I just feel that it's a wonderful way to give back. And I have gained so much by the knowledge that I've of being involved on many committees over the years. I have the full support of my company. They know that I will be at meetings a lot at the board. I already am. I have to say, sorry, I won't be in for the next 6 hours. I'm at the board at meetings. They understand. I've worked with Jenny Pruitt and David Bamig, who are both past presidents, and they're very supportive of this, and they will fill in for me when they need to.
Now, you guys are working on a big event, the Showcase Real Estate Trade Show. You want to share a little bit about what that's about?
Absolutely. It's called the Southeast Residential Real Estate Trade Show, and it will be held on Thursday, August the 23rd at the Cobb Galleria Center from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. As the name implies, it is a trade show open to not only realtors and affiliated businesses like mortgage lenders and appraisers and home inspectors and home warranty companies, but to the public. And I would encourage the public to purchase a ticket for $10 to attend this show. It is in its 12th year, and it is sponsored, hosted by the Atlanta Board of Realtors and First Multiple Listing Service. And we expect about 3,000 people to attend. It is a place where real estate professionals can and the public can go, and they can see the latest products and services. There'll be about 150 vendors there with booths, and we are very excited about some of the programs that we have planned. For example, in the morning, there's going to be a program on new mobile apps from Realtor.com. We're going to have an economic forecast from Frank Norton, who's a very respected man in forecasting real estate trends. And one of the new things we're going to do is at noon, we're going to have a consumer home buyers panel moderated by the president of our company, David Bamig, who is a past president, as I said, of the Atlanta Board. And this is going to be a panel made up of home buyers who have recently purchased homes. And this is a new twist, you all. We've never done this before. And they're going to be asked what was the best part of your experience? What was the worst part of your experience? What could have happened differently? And so here we as real estate professionals will be getting a real honest assessment from the consumer as to what we could have done differently. I think it's a real good thing.
Right. Now, and the general public would benefit because in a short period of time, they can kind of get the lay of the land of who's out there vendor-wise to help them with their home, whether they're rehabbing a home or renovating a home. And then they can probably meet tons and tons of real estate professionals if they're selling their home,
that's
I would imagine.
That's right. There'll be lots of real estate professionals there. It is going to be, as I said, products and services that will be important for the buyer, the seller, and the real estate professional. We're also going to have a keynote speaker, Elise Glink, who is very heavily involved with real estate, and she's going to give advice as well. And so it is something that I would encourage everyone to do. And you can go online to www.abr.org, click on Trade Show, and you can purchase a ticket in advance, and you can get all the information you need about it.
Now, you mentioned Frank Norton, and the he's an economic forecaster, I believe.
Yes.
And what's your feelings about the market? Are you bullish, bearish?
I'm very encouraged about the market right this minute. In fact, I've done some research just recently, so I'll have my statistics accurate for you all. In the past year, year over year, in the metro Atlanta area, about 11 counties, the market, the sales are up about 17%, which is very encouraging. In our own company, year over year, our sales are up 40%.
Wow.
So, you all, we don't hear this in the news media. We hear lots of negative things, but I will tell you that prices are rising slightly. I still think there are more foreclosures that will be coming on the market, and that will keep prices maybe a little low for a while until those foreclosures have gone through. But I will tell you that every market has submarkets, and real estate is a very local industry, as you know. And there are some markets now that where we're seeing multiple offers, and I want to name a few markets that are hot. I would say In Town, Buckhead, Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, Alpharetta, and East Cobb, to name a few. And what we're seeing, which is encouraging to all of us, is that when a property is priced right, by that I mean priced at market or slightly below, and it's in good condition, they're selling quickly. We're seeing a phenomenon called multiple offers, which we hadn't seen in a few years, and we're seeing a lot of multiple offers now because inventory is low. We actually need more inventory now. And so because inventory is low, when a good house comes on the market, and as I said, it's well-priced and in good condition, multiple people go after that property, and that will drive prices up in time. So we're very encouraged.
Now, are you seeing the move to these properties? Are they from, like, renters who are moving to a home because it's cheaper or more affordable, or is it People
moving up, maybe.
Moving up?
Yeah, it's renters.
So they're able to get rid of their house,
yes,
too?
Yes, absolutely. Because if they've got their house in a saleable
and
situation,
priced right,
then they can sell and they can move up. Mm-hmm. And so To answer your question about how I feel about the market, I think that we're experiencing a broad-based recovery right now, and the price ranges where we're seeing the most activity, I would say, is between 250 and 500,000, but really even in other price ranges as well. So I feel the third quarter will be strong, and the fourth quarter may be a little sluggish as we go into the election. I think, you know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen then, but I want to make it very clear that the real estate market is appearing to be strong right now.
Now, is that across the board, homes, condos, townhouses, everything?
Yes. Yes.
That's encouraging. That's very encouraging. And we got to get you and your team in here on the Real Estate Atlanta show on Wednesday's afternoon. That would be a lot of fun.
Would you love to do that? Yes, absolutely.
You'd have some people you can bring from your office?
I've got top agents, and they would love to come and
talk about themselves.
All right. Well, let's make that happen. We'll definitely make that. Do you still have any room for sponsors, exhibitors at this August 23rd event?
We certainly do. We have a trade show committee that's very active at the board right now, and I would like to encourage vendors to buy a booth. It will give you great exposure. You will meet probably we're expecting to have 3,000 attendees.
Wow.
It's going to be a well-attended show and a very fine one this year. So if you're interested, if you're in any facet, you could be, you know, a photographer who takes pictures of houses. You could be a home warranty company, as I said, you know, skilled work person who can do renovations and improvements on homes. We would invite you to be in touch with our trade show committee, again, by logging on to www.abr.org. And if you're interested in being a vendor there, certainly we'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. And contact information for you at Atlanta Fine Homes.
Nancy@AtlantaFineHomes.com.
And that's the website there, too, AtlantaFineHomes.com.
AtlantaFineHomes.com.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. All right. Nicely done.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, good, because we really do want to have you back. I think it would be a blast to have you and your team on the Real Estate Atlanta show. So we'll get with you and make that happen.
Thank you. How about
hanging with us? We got one more interview. We got the guy bringing it home. We're going to bring this thing back to where I started it early in
that's
the show.
Right.
We're going to talk about my favorite subject, Lee. You know what that is?
Coffee.
Please welcome to the show with Java Tap Coffee, Mr. Dan Redmond. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Stone. Thanks. Hey, Lee.
It's good to have you. You look very nice in your logo wear.
I'm all branded just for you today.
Did you bring Lee a shirt, too? No. So, Java Tap Coffee, I caught you out in the break room because you've got the Java Tap Coffee machine, which I may be the sole supporter. I don't know.
You're a big fan.
But I certainly am doing my part. Tell us a little bit about your business, man.
Well, I think to really bring it into this show, we keep the consultants and the realtors awake when they're working so hard. And I'm here to tell you that the coffee makes people innovative. So the more coffee you drink, the more innovative you are. So you should put that on your assessment, Sally. Do you drink enough coffee? Check to make sure they got a good vendor for coffee. Well, you know what? Anybody who listens to High Velocity Radio has lived through the experience of just bad office coffee and even restaurant coffee.
I thought he was going to say bad radio.
I was about to mute him.
He was getting ready to hit the mute button.
thanks for the delay, right? And my wife and I got into this a couple of years ago, a little bit with an enough is enough approach. We have always had high-end coffee systems in our house. We enjoy our coffee. We were looking to start a new business, and this sort of brought everything together when we met the folks at Seiko, which is the systems that we use. These are pretty popular in Europe, and essentially we bring the cafe coffee to wherever our customers need it. Our systems can be fully standalone. We provide all the service, all the ingredients, everything, and they run 24/7. You never even have to turn them off. So in a work environment where people are working late or coming in on weekends, and you usually have a thermos type or pots that you have to make or full pots at a time, all that goes away. And not only are you getting rid of a bad process, but you're getting rid of bad coffee and replacing that with a very affordable way of getting good coffee, regular drip coffee, and all the spectrum of gourmet coffees. If you go to our website at javatap.com, you can see we have about over 20 different types of coffees that we can make out of our systems, from heavily caffeinated double espressos to even chai tea lattes that are just magnificent. And it's all natural ingredients. It's none of this artificial stuff. It's no pods. It's no pouches. It's just real coffee.
And he names the machines. I think the one at the Alpharetta studio. Because you've got one at the Alpharetta 2300 Lakeview, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's Clyde. And I think Susie's here. He names his machines. How cool is that?
Actually, my kids name the machines. We have a little, vote around a dinner table. They named assistants for me.
So in this situation, you've worked with the executive suite company. And so you've come in and provided that in a break room. But there's offices all over town. So you can work with people and set it up in their offices, and it's set it and forget it, right? They don't have to fool with it.
That's right. It takes all the administrative work out of it. We just handle it, and there's no we can charge on a variety of different ways, whether it be charge the employees that set it up as a full vendor arrangement or just invoice the company.
Oh, it doesn't have to be like this one. I popped the quarter in.
No, we
got a different.
Yeah, we can set it up to where we just invoice the company based on a number of dispenses. So the machines are very sophisticated, so we can tell exactly what they've done over whatever period of time. In some cases, it's a blended arrangement where companies offer it to their employees at a very cheap price, a quarter or 50 cents or something like that, and then we just invoice the company for the difference in order for them to manage budget while still bringing in a good coffee for the customers. I think what really sets this apart is every time you make a coffee out of one of our systems, it actually grinds beans into a fresh espresso puck and puts a fresh espresso into a cup that's contained. So it dispenses the cup, a stir stick. You can do the sweeteners, whatever you want in there. And then it mixes it whatever you want, the chocolates or the milk. And we use 100% all-natural milk that's dehydrated, so it's not this preservative kind of stuff.
Well, I got to tell you, sweet. The stir stick freaked me out the very first time. After that, I knew it was coming. But the very first time, the stir stick freaked me out. That was
people like the stir stick. It's funny because if we do run out of stir sticks in a system, we get a call for that.
You're out of stir sticks.
Yeah. Like there isn't a substitute, but they like the stir stick.
But we have our own routine, right? Because I do the double espresso. And then Lee does one espresso, and he does.
And I mix it in with the coffee.
He mixes it in with the regular coffee, so we all have our own little routine.
Sorry about that. I'm using their coffee and your espresso.
No, it's good. Though.
It's a blended approach.
If you go with the cafe americano, you kind of get the exact same thing.
But it's kind of not the same.
You like it's still too strong for you.
Too strong. No. What's in the americano?
It's really just a long espresso.
Well, what's in it? It's one espresso.
It's one espresso shot. Yep, and fills
water.
The cup. Yeah,
right. So I take one espresso shot and put it in coffee.
Okay. So he's going extra. So
I'm getting coffee and espresso.
So you're getting even more. Okay, hey, that's what you like.
So
that's
you have a new drink now. You can call it the Lee or the OK.
Lee. That's what we'll do. Right. We'll put a button on it just for you, Lee.
Do you have like regular coffee as a choice too? Because I don't think that's a choice in ours.
No, it's not because they have it as a separate offering. But yeah, in fact, in a couple of real estate companies, it's the only system that they offer. And we make a drip strength coffee as well. Uh-huh. It's just... We can actually make 14 different types of beverages on the system
out of that
at a
same
time.
Machine. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's more ingredient limited than it is recipe limited. If right. that makes sense.
But you can put like Bailey's in there or whatever.
Well, you know what
we
do host events. I mean, we've been to chambers of commerce and things like that where we got the Kahlua on the side, and we have it in restaurants. There's a couple of high end neighborhoods in the Atlanta area that actually have these in their kitchen. And it's great because they don't have to train their servers to be baristas
anymore.
Just hit
the button.
And they
hit
get a
button.
Consistent coffee every single time. And it's magnificent. And then they take it out to the bar. And the bar uses it to make an adult beverage. And it covers the evening crowd really well.
So let's talk about the marketing for a moment. Because how does this work? You go and you're knocking on doors, visiting office buildings. How are you getting to market with this stuff?
Yeah, we got the first machines out there and actually has been word of mouth. We do a lot of door knocking just to try to get a little bit more notice. It's very hard to move a coffee company out of an existing facility.
If they're doing just a halfway decent job, right, it's just a hassle or...
Well, and it's not necessarily something that's on management's radar. You know, do we have coffee? Yes, check the box, and we've moved on. Where, you know, it's often the joke in the office. And it's not a large step to go from just regular old, you know, bargain basement type coffee beans that you make in a pod to bringing in a JavaTap solution that allows the employees to stay in the office, not have to run out 2 o'clock to a Starbucks and spend $3.50, $4.50 on it, where you're able to offer that to them. And it comes across really as a benefit because it is good quality coffee. It's not a substitute just to keep them from falling asleep.
So it really would make them more innovative.
It makes them more innovative.
It has an impact on the culture.
Even on the weekend. But yeah, we do a lot of door knocking and just trying to build relationships.
I'd be curious to see if if we can take Sally's assessment and people who drink your coffee and who don't drink coffee and see if it changes the scores.
The puzzles would get done faster. I don't know if they would be any more accurate, but I'm
they'll
sure
be sharper. And they'll be happier employees. That's what they'll be.
So what's the best way for people to reach out and learn more about this and maybe have you come in and describe all the alternatives to them?
Yeah, the best way is to go to javatap.com. That's tap with a T, javatap.com. You can see all the different types of beverages that we make. Contact information is available out there. You can ping us, and we'll actually offer a free trial. We come out to your place, set up these systems, and if you like them, then we work out an arrangement for you. It gets a lot of attention.
And it's small footprint, too. That's another thing that's important.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't take up a lot of space.
Machine, very streamlined.
It
does. Right.
And we can set it up where it's fully self-contained. So where there's a water line, great. But if not, we actually have containers that go into the bottom units. So as long as we're 6 foot from a plug, we can actually put these things anywhere, which are great for the conference centers that we have them in. And even the schools, we're trying to get them where they want to get coffee closer to dorms and those types of things. And they don't really have a cafeteria. The universities in the local area have them where they're providing to the students.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah, great solution. There really isn't a place that doesn't work.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, man, and for keeping Lee and I awake during our
throughout the day. You're a key
happy to help.
You're a big part of our
you
company.
You're a big part of Business Radio X. You probably didn't even realize that.
We're happy to do it. So for being on the show, we'd like to come back and look forward to seeing you guys again.
All right, man. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, Lori Ba Kopelos, Lori B, Sally Jamara, Nancy C, Dan Redman, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.